Hello and welcome. My name is Jennifer Ray from jenniferray.com. In today's interview, I'm speaking with Dr. Saraswati Marcus. Dr. Saraswati is a holistic and integrative Chinese medicine doctor. She primarily works in the fields of women's health and gynecology. She founded and runs the Nourishing Life Center, which is an integrative Chinese medicine practice. She's been working with women for over 22 years. So in today's call, we're going to discuss women's health overall and how we can weave practices like yoga and meditation into our daily life to find greater ease. We'll touch on issues like fertility and menopause. Dr. Saraswati conducted, during her doctoral research, a randomized clinical trial where she investigated herbal medicinals for menopausal syndrome. And she discovered new ways to manage the symptoms of fluctuating hormones, so we'll definitely touch on that. I'm really happy to be speaking with her today, and I hope you enjoy. Might start here with a little bit of time for you to talk about the evolution of your personal yoga practice and what it looks like now. I know you've had quite the journey, so you've been teaching and practicing for a very long time.
Yeah, well, I just want to say thank you, Jennifer. I'm so excited to be your guest.
You know, we both integrate these worlds of Chinese medicine and yoga, and so I'm very much drawn to your work because it's fairly rare for people to be kind of immersed in the Chinese medicine field as well as also deeply on the path of yoga. So yeah, this is kind of what draws me to your teachings.
Yeah, and I felt the same way about you and your work as you know as well. So thank you so much for making the effort and inviting me. And I'm so happy to be here. And hello to everybody out there in the audience. It's nice to be with you too. You know, it's so funny, you know, you asked about, you know, what my evolution was. And so I was first a Chinese medicine practitioner. I started Chinese medicine school in 1991. And so I graduated really about 20 years ago in 1995. And then about 10 years later, I went back to school and that's not quite the right timeline, maybe 7 or 8 years later, whatever, went back to school and got my doctorate. And that's when I actually conducted the research using herbal medicines and really specifically looking at menopausal hot flashes, because that's the predominant symptom that Western women experience and have the most, resistance and the symptom that they find the most worrisome or diminishes their quality of life. So that's what I chose as a target point, almost feeling like if there was a strategy that had an impact on the symptom, this most predominant one, that probably the whole syndrome would in fact change or shift if we could look at that one and isolate that. So that was, and that's really part of the evolution. There is a relationship to yoga, which I'll loop back around and hopefully won't take too long. Please cut me off.
That's okay.
When I started yoga, I was already, a student of Chinese medicine. So I'm not kidding. From the first moment when I would sweep my arms up into and point them towards the sky and draw them down through the midline, I could tell this was doing something to energy, you know? And then the question became, you know, and I wouldn't really think through my whole yoga practice, but it did begin to form itself. Like, what way is that affecting the energy? Is it more affecting it in a yang way or in a yin way? In which meridian line is it affecting it? And then that just began to grow and grow and grow and honestly express itself. That practices, I would then begin to immediately classify practices as I was doing them, the sort of crossover. You know, and perhaps you can relate to this, like once you understand a system as well as we get to understand an energetic system, then you can apply almost anything to it, you know, our whole, one's whole approach, their relation to their relationship to their life can be a treatment. And we were talking about this a few minutes ago before we started recording. So that's kind of how that, that evolved, and really the system, I mean, it did take some, I had to construct some things. Honestly, I still am in the process because I'm sort of bringing something into being that was not really as formed as what I'm doing. You know, there are some people out there who are some forerunners, people who have been doing Acu Yoga. Those people have been really, really lovely and generous to me. I want to give a shout out to Michael in Northern California. He's been very supportive with his work. But, you know, when we're really talking about, and then I guess there's also the yin yoga people have been doing some work in, the yin yoga people have been doing some work. I guess, you know, and I want to, I think the subject, and I do want to get back to the study, but I'll just make this point about, I think, I'll count it like this. I think that the subject of yin and yang is so wildly complex that that it takes a long time to let that settle in to what really how we really do activate yin energies and yang energies, you know, all the many principles that apply, the laws of yin and yang, so to speak. And I think that that's not, that there's opportunity for those nuances and the potency to get a little bit sort of washed with one brush. And so that's my only kind of, as a Chinese medicine person, I sometimes, you know, that's what I'm trying to do with Tao Flow Yoga is really dive much, much more deeply into those kinds of issues. A lot of what we've talked about. So
yeah, I feel similarly with the, you know, teaching yin yoga. I offer longer sort of intensive training because the most yoga teachers don't practice Chinese medicine. And so, you know, we use these terms and they have such, the tradition of Chinese medicine has such depth to offer as you explore it. So I absolutely agree that we can use these terms and just sort of as general ideas.
I'd love to take your yin yoga class.
Well, maybe one day.
You know, I'll just tell you a little bit about the research that I did. And then in the research, and this is pretty well established, has been written about a lot, one of the most effective therapies for hot flash is deep breathing. And it's deep belly breath, what we call diaphragmatic breath, and that sort of links into all of the research that has been done around the relaxation response and kind of what that really does to the body, but just, and how fast in just 2 minutes of deep belly breath. And that's kind of one of the practices. I think a lot of people know, but if there's one person out there that doesn't know it, they should know. You know,
So how would you, maybe just for our audience listening, how would you describe using that practice in sort of daily life, and what would it entail?
Yeah, just very quickly. say you're feeling, you know, uptight or anxious, maybe even, you know, have had some emotional turn, so that you feel, a word we use a lot in Chinese medicine and in Taoist thought is resistance. Mm-hmm. We think resistance is the enemy, if you will, of the Tao. Mm-hmm. And acceptance is. So anytime you're feeling a resistance or some kind of contracted feeling, you can use this practice. Mm-hmm. And it's actually two steps. So that's even better. Mm-hmm. It's a two-step practice. Uh-huh. And the first one uses a traditional yogic breath called Simhasana, pranayama, mm-hmm. and that's just lion's breath. And this is where I like to think of it as a release valve for prana that's built up in the upper body, where the upper body tends to get overstimulated and overreactive. Mm-hmm. And this causes a consumption of our resources from that should be stored nice and safe and neat and tucked away for the future in our lower dantian. And when we have energy compressed, like over emotional, over stress, overthinking, overdoing in general, which is pretty common in today's modern world, energy gets blocked in the upper body. Get blocked and it becomes overstimulated. Those are two different ways. So this can be used for either one. Mm-hmm. So first you do lion's breath, and that's where you take a big inhale and lift the chest and really open the throat, lift the nose, lift the chin, and sort of an expansion. And then with an exhale, you bring the tongue all the way out of the mouth and make sound with the throat and roll the eyes up to look at the midpoint of the forehead. Uh-huh. So it's really like a kind of a purging, mm-hmm. like a letting off the steam. So I would do two lion's breath repetitions and then follow that with deep belly, low abdominal breath, where you actually imagine yourself, so this is step two, imagine yourself drawing breath in through the third eye or the sixth chakra. Mm-hmm. Breathe that in, and then take it straight down. And if you can, imagine, you can use visualization here, it could be a golden flecked light that we associate with yang qi. Mm-hmm. And bring that down in through these subtle chakras, down through the heart, and allow that breath to breathe open the belly in all four directions, front, back, side to side. And if you can, suspend that for just a beat, but not too long. And then with the exhale, you want to feel, you should feel like a natural coning up and in, mm-hmm. at the root, at the Muladhara or first chakra. Mm. So I'm moving up and in, and that generates the exhale and the breath, rather the belly back to the spine. And then we start again, and the breath moves in through the third eye. I mean, you can detail that out into like a microcosmic orbit, but I usually will, the aim here is really taking the breath and down into the belly, and then for women, for, you know, really at any place along the life cycle, whether in the reproductive years or post-reproductive years, getting blood moving in the lower belly, in the first and second chakra, mm-hmm. is a key. I mean, that is like, write it down and put it on your refrigerator. Get pelvic blood moving. And this is actually certainly something that does that. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much the technique. Again, it's breathing in through the third eye, taking it down into the low belly, and really feeling the belly expand front, back, side to side. And sometimes I'll use the languaging in class. This might be for yoga teachers, where you're actually grounding and spreading and softening the sitting bones, like into the earth. Mm. I like to add some empowerment languaging, like claiming this territory, like I'm mine, you know? So like there's a real grounding even in that vibration, which is a yin tonic. When you feel grounded, it tonifies your yin.
Yeah, great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Does this relate? Can you,
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what women, I think, in general need, and especially when, you know, when we're working with some of these difficulties in the body. So perfect. Yeah. So the belly breath and the fire breath, the breath of fire as well. And then again, yeah, just reclaiming that area of the body, the whole pelvic region, can be very powerful. Great. And I love the connection that you bring then into the Chinese medicine language of being a yin tonic. So, you know, traditionally we talk, well, I mean, I suppose even in traditional literature, it's not only, we don't only tonify something like the yin through herbal medicine or through the acupuncture points, but we also tonify it through different lifestyle and diet activity too. So great. Yeah. And ways of thinking. So, because really yin and yang pervades everything. So, we can affect it in so many different ways. Great. Thank you for that. So let's move on. You talk a little bit about, I'm just going to check. Yeah. So you talk a little bit about, well, you specialize in fertility, working with women's health in general. Is there a specific practice that you can suggest other than what we've kind of covered so far about reclaiming this space of the pelvic bowl, a specific practice that would be good for women working a little bit more with infertility issues?
Sure. And I'd love to give you really short answers and just move through a lot of content. And I have been a little bit accused of being a little chatty.
Oh, so. You're fine. Yeah, you're good.
But it's really not true that I work primarily with women with infertility. Okay. I certainly started that way, and it was by accident, you know, which speaks so loudly how potent Chinese medicine really is. I, you know, women came in. I was at the very beginning of my practice, and I essentially opened the book to where it says, you know, infertility, and did the points and gave those herbs, you know. Now the patients, they came back week after week, and, you know, some people get frustrated or, you know, don't come or whatever, or trying a million things at once. And so there's all those kinds of complications, but the patients were very compliant. I'm thinking of two different cases, and they both turned up pregnant. I mean, and these were really pretty severe cases. So then just, I had tons of people coming after that, you know, because that's, you have good experience, and they send people, especially for something as, you know, central as having a child. That's, you know, not like, oh, I have a headache, or, you know, become, it touches so many core issues around who I thought I was, what I thought I was going to be. If I don't have a child, it's the end of my bloodline. So there's like an element of mortality. You feel less like a woman. I mean, they're just, it's a very, you know, it touches a lot of different areas. So it becomes a pretty major subject. And so if something is helping that, people are eager to know. And so I did start with that, and I did a lot of work with this well before, as you know, the very first study that combined acupuncture was published in 2002. And so I was practicing already 7 years by then. So I was well into treating this thing, you know, and had a large practice. So that was sort of an interesting big bump we got. And then a ton more patients started coming. So I did about 5 years ago create a DVD series for women to help conceive. That is a yoga practice, and not just one yoga practice, but it works in one of the ways that Chinese medicine works is to recognize the menstrual cycle as a reflection of the lunar cycle, and like the lunar cycle, has phases. Mm. And we can say phases where energy or yin or yang is rising and yin and yang is falling. And this really very clearly mirrors the hormonal activity in the body and different meridians that are active. And so what I would typically do, and that's only one way, there are many ways to treat infertility, but that is what's called, as you know, a phased approach, recognizing there's a menstrual phase and a pre-ovulatory phase and a post-ovulatory phase and a premenstrual phase. So there's all, and there are different things happening, whether you're trying to achieve pregnancy or avoid pregnancy. We still want a healthy, robust, fertile expression, because our fertility is, of course, our opportunity to bring forth life, but it's also the seed of our creativity. Mm-hmm. And the way we nourish others and ourselves are based in those same energies. And I think that's also really important to give a shout out to that when we think about, because what percentage? 80% of the time? I mean, like a very high percentage when I talk about fertility enhancement or working with yoga to boost your menstrual cycle, most younger women, and I'll say women in their 20s, are like, no, I don't want to boost my fertility,
right?
You know, and so scared to death of it. And I mean, it's reasonable, but there's like what I usually, how I think about that is that everything we do has a benefit and a cost. Mm. And we just have to, as long as we are, I say this probably every single day of my practice, living with our eyes wide open, you know, like really, I understand what I'm doing when I suppress my fertility with a oral contraception of some kind, hormonal, then great. Mm. You know, that's it. But it does have an influence on this larger fertile stance in life, which is the same fertile stance that I invite women in their post-reproductive years to step into. And so I guess all of this to say that many of the same practices that I have used to work with fertility enhancement have found their way into being worked with in the post-reproductive years. Mm-hmm. It's not like completely set of different practices. The thing that seems to be the issue is that younger women, most of them usually have enough resources, meaning they have enough what we call kidney essence, or the raw materials from which hormones are an expression of. Mm-hmm. And older women simply have less of that. Mm-hmm. And so that becomes part of the conversation of how they interact with their life and how they practice. A person with much less jing, in my opinion, should be guard very carefully against overdoing it in a yoga practice. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk about languaging. I talk about the culture of conservation. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean that we can't move a little bit. In fact, resiliency is a very big deal for menopausal women and feeling like they have some bounce back, you know, like they can, you know, have a day where they eat some sugar or have a glass of wine or whatever, and they're not like, you know, floored, or they get 6 hours of sleep instead of seven and they just can't function or whatever. This is called no resiliency, right?
Right.
And so a technique, and I can loop back around and do the some of the stuff I really like to give for fertility enhancement, but for resiliency, I like to really work with not so much, like I said, what we practice, but how we practice. Mm-hmm. So not getting exhausted, but also pacing. So really drawing from some of the research that's been done on interval training, mm-hmm. and I've adapted that to really very specific stimulation sets and rejuvenation, recalibration, if mm-hmm. you will, sets, so that the nervous system gets used to revving up and relaxing down and revving up and relaxing mm-hmm. down. And we're doing a lot of acupressure along the way. Mm-hmm. And a lot of deep belly breath, usually, when we're in relaxation, so we can reset the body into relaxation mode. So we're in various postures where that would feel very normal and natural. So an example might be to use something like, not everybody calls this practice this way, but something I like to use called Hanuman Kriya. If you know this one, where mm-hmm. you're in sort of a warrior prep with your hands down, like a warrior one with the back heel spinning upward, maybe like, I guess we could call that a crescent lunge, with the hands placed by the front foot, and you switch legs, like as if you're going to go into Hanumanasana.
Is that you or me?
As if you're going to go into Hanumanasana, but so you switch legs back and forth, and you do... you switch. I mean, it can be any kind of set. I usually do a set of three, mm-hmm. and you know, either three or five times. And then we'll take extended child's pose with the knees, wide legs, with the arms out in front. And then I like to use a hard block and place it right at the third eye, right sort of the bridge of the nose. So you really get the bridge of the nose, yin tongue, the sixth chakra, right into the edge of the block. And then we take deep belly breath and roll across the whole eyebrow ridge like this. Sometimes I call it walking meditation of the eyebrow.
That's great.
I think, well, because we know that when you put your mind inside the direct felt sensation in the body, that... that's one of the ways the body heals, that when we're really present and with our experience, our body then shifts, taps into its own ability to heal itself on its own. So that's an example of a way of toning the nervous system that really builds resiliency, without really getting worn out, but with a, I don't know, 45 minute, you know, heavy practice.
Well, I mean, many women are used to having some sort of activity and exercise, so it can be a little bit of a downer, I think, to suddenly be like, oh, you're only allowed to do restorative yoga, or, you know, so it's nice to have that balance. In my world, it's usually comes in the form of a kind of yin-yang practice, so very similar, actually, to the practice you just described of doing, you know, activity and then coming back to a place of rest and then into a little bit more activity. And so from the sort of languaging of the yin yoga people, it's basically the yang yoga is helping to circulate and move prana or chi in the body. And then as we transition into the yin practice, it's helping to sort of pool the prana or chi in particular joint sites or tissues or organ systems. So, and then of course the yin practice activates, like you said, that nervous system response, so that you find a place of relaxation and calm and internal looking, which kind of brings us back to the place of using our state of mind and our activity as a way to tonify yin as well, that it's not only through the acupuncture or the herbs. So definitely appreciate that. That's great practice for people. So, you know, for those of you listening, using these practices out in our lives or in our home yoga practice is very easy, you know, just sort of balancing the more active styles of yoga with some of the softer, more receptive styles can be helpful, and to really tonify the nervous system, like Saraswati mentioned, and to bring more balance into the system that way.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And they say that the best ratio. This is sometimes a little bit hard to get dialed in, but we can work on it, right?
Yeah.
A 3-to-1 ratio. Okay. So if you're going to do 9 minutes of stimulation, then you would follow it with 3 minutes of a relaxation, a restorative.
Okay.
A recalibration. I like that languaging, or rejuvenating.
Great.
Regenerating, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
God, I think the yin yoga subject is so interesting. I know we're kind of moving through our time. I just feel like you and I feel like we could just talk for
I think we could. Well, you know what? Maybe we'll do another one of these videos and we can kind of have a different type of focus as well. Maybe looking a little bit more at the yin yoga for sure. So we do need to wrap up, but maybe we can just finish by, I wanted to ask you if you have anything. I know that there are a group of aspiring yoga teachers or people, teachers who are just kind of beginning on their yoga teaching path. So I wanted to ask you if you have anything that you would suggest that maybe is inspiring you right now, where you are kind of personally or in your private practice, in your yoga practice, any ways that you find really helps to keep you inspired on this path and keeping you kind of going deeper with your yoga practice. I'm wondering if you have anything to share.
Let's see. I mean, I think I've tried to speak to yoga teachers throughout this whole time together, but what's keeping me inspired is just the recognition that there's so much to study and to learn.
Mm.
I mean, it's a subject worthy of a lifetime of enthusiasm, both yoga and the many kinds of yoga. I think that something I've been very interested in is, I believe it's from the Patanjali Sutras 1.33, where the Buddhists would call it the Brahma Viharas, and these are the four abodes or the four homes, our natural states of being, without the way we're conditioned or without our wounds. That one of the promises of yoga is that naturally what will emerge is loving kindness.
Mm.
Naturally what will emerge is compassion, joy for each other's success rather than envy, and the fourth one is wisdom, or equanimity.
Mm.
That's one of the promises of yoga, and that when we move the body and when we share with our students and inspire them of these promises, that as we move the body, we are in a way cultivating the very ground so that what we want can emerge and can shine through.
Mm.
I think that's actually at the heart of the name of my center is Nourishing Life. And that is the heart of Nourishing Life, is that we are cultivating the ability to turn towards health, that our health and our happiness is an expression of harmony. So if one isn't healthy, if one isn't happy, then rather than targeting the symptom or which pose for, high FSH or which pose for painful menses, how can I more globally explore my life and see where it's in balance and where it's not, or rather where is it in harmony and where is it not?
Mm-hmm.
And as we work to achieve harmony, then life expresses and falls into place all on its own.
Yeah.
These are some of the things that really inspire me to continue to grow and move forward.
Mm. Great, thank you for that. I love that you brought up the Brahma Viharas. It's a point that I generally bring up a lot, kind of comparing how the yoga practice, so the sutras of Patanjali, you know, speak of something very similar to what the Brahma Viharas are sort of taught within traditional Buddhist practice. So I love when you start to find these connections between different, seemingly different traditions. So thank you for sharing that with our audience today. Yeah, so is there anything that you wanted to mention for people to check out? I know we'll mention your website here. So if you want to learn a little bit more about Dr. Saraswati, you can find her at nourishinglife.com. And if you want to find out a little bit more about me, you can find me at jenniferray.com. Ray is spelled R-A-Y-E. Yeah, anything else? Any big projects? I know you mentioned a video that you have. Can people purchase that on your website?
They can. Okay. There's a video link, and then there's also a downloads link. So you can have the hard copy. It's 5 discs. So there's 4 phases to the menstrual cycle. And then the 5th disc are 16 different teaching kind of interviews about different aspects of women's health and help getting pregnant. There's a lot of reviews on Amazon that are always fun for me to read, that just how people are enjoying the DVD. So anyway, there's a hard copy, and then there's also you can purchase the download and, you know, watch as many times as you want. It's yours.
Great.
Also, and then for women in their perimenopause or menopausal years, those practices are fine. And I've written articles on how you can use those. But then there's also 2 other downloads called The Essence and Womb Breath. And these are good for all women of any life stage and work on balancing hormones.
Great.
So that's, and then the last thing I'll say is that I do offer a teacher training, advanced teacher training for yoga teachers already who are interested in learning about Chinese medicine, energetics, yoga, and women's health. So where those 3 come together, it's 108 hours over 4 modules. Or you can come to a 10-day immersion. And then for acupuncturists or just interested individuals who are interested in kind of this subject, I do have a Tao Flow 200-hour program.
Great.
So a Tao Flow RYT. So those are 2 things that are happening in Asheville, North Carolina. So I'd love to hear from you if this sounds like something you want to learn more about. There's so much to say.
Definitely endless. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom. It's deeply appreciated. Much gratitude to you.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much to Dr. Saraswati for speaking with me today. If you'd like to learn more about her work, be sure to head over to nourishinglife.com. And if you'd like to sign up for my mailing list, you can do that at jenniferray.com. Ray is spelled R-A-Y-E. Thank you so much for listening, and take care.